Welcome back to Copper Country Today, heard Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock on 97.7 The Wolf, 8 o'clock on 1400 AM, 99.3 FM WCCY, and 9 o'clock on KBAR 102.3. Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, proud supporters of the Copper Country Humane Society and the Keweenaw Spay and Neuter Assistance Group. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at KeweenawReport.com. My guest in this segment is Michigan State Senator from the 38th District, Mr. Tom Casperson. Senator Casperson, thank you so much for joining me on today's program.
Thanks for having me.
We never did get to, at least on these airwaves, to congratulate you on your victory back in November.
Oh, thank you very much.
Let's start off, I guess, get into the one of the bigger issues regarding the wolf hunting, wolf issues with the federal judge's ruling that the gray wolf is back on the endangered species list. A lot of strong words are coming from all of the lawmakers in the UP. I guess, what was your take when you first heard about it?
Well, I was actually shocked that a judge could rule this way. But then when I thought about it, they went and judge shopped the United States Humane Society, so they found the judge that they knew would be favorable to them, and that's where they went. Because I read the affidavits that were turned in, one of them by one of our residents in the Upper Peninsula, and in her own words, are pretty scary stuff. I mean, if the judge is listening to this kind of stuff, wow, it's no wonder we got problems. And so in her own words, they kind of expose what they're up to, and it wasn't anything to do with what we had talked about earlier with managing wolves and making sure that we had a reasonable number that we could all cohabitate together. It's all about the wolves at all cost and everybody else, the heck with you, and the heck with your way of life. I mean, just forget about it. It's scary.
And are you hoping, or have you heard anything about Attorney General Bill Schuette maybe getting involved in this?
Well, I haven't talked to Bill. I would be kind of curious if you would, because it seems like that's one of the only avenues that we have at our disposal, because the United States Humane Society has millions, probably hundreds of millions of dollars to fight this. So they got what they wanted. They got it in the courts where they can outspend you and drive this thing the way they want it to go through the court systems. And as we've seen now with the judge they went to, judge shop, to make sure they get the proper judges. So they've kind of greased the skids here pretty good to get what they want. Unfortunately, though, or fortunately, I don't know which way, but we've got a problem here, and it's not just the Upper Peninsula. It's northern Wisconsin and Minnesota as well. And this idea that somehow the wolves will just be fine and just leave them go and everything will be fuzzy, warm, and nice, is a very dangerous approach. And in fact, there's too much evidence out there to show that that can be a dangerous stance that we take. And what's unfortunate here is our side was not talking about elimination. We were just simply talking about managing so that everybody is on a level playing field here. And when you got people talking about wolves as if they're human beings and we can, they can communicate with them and those kind of things and cohabitate with them, that's utter ridiculousness.
And of course, there were the two proposals during the November election, and despite overwhelming support in the Upper Peninsula in terms of the actual numbers of the votes, it still got voted down. And again, just your reaction to that, to almost the people who are involved with the wolf issue getting outnumbered by those downstate.
Well, if you look at the map, MUCC did a map of the vote tallies, to see who did what. And you'll find that Lower Michigan and big parts were with us as well. All the rural parts of Lower Michigan were with us. Who went against us was the Traverse City Corridor, the Petoskey-Charlevoix-Traverse City Corridor, that whole region along that area. And you got a lot of folks that have with big money. They retire up there. It's kind of their little sanctuary to get away. And it's beautiful up there, no doubt. But that area went against us, and Southeast Michigan went against us down in the Detroit area. But the rest of the state, if you look at the voting, many counties, I think there's 52 counties went with us. So it's very telling that those that live in the great outdoors understand the concept of some balance here versus those that live in the city and they hear these messages from the United States Humane Society painted in this fuzzy, warm, beautiful little approach and being half-truths and not telling people the whole story of what's happening up here, they can win them over with their money. And the sportsmen couldn't compete with the kind of money that they ran. And when you look at the ads, they were, again, I think ridiculous, but we didn't have the money to counter it. And it, what was really telling is, if you'll notice, they didn't run any of those ads up here in the UP.
Yep,
it would have inflamed even more people up here if they'd have run those ads. If the people in the UP would have heard what they were saying to the folks downstate, they would have been appalled even more so, I believe.
Do you think there's maybe another system that can be devised where the people who are dealing with this should be the ones to decide, or maybe something where you say, hey, let the biologists figure out if this is an issue or not?
Well, it should be, but unfortunately, when you're dealing with a group like this, especially with this kind of mentality, I mean, you read these affidavits, it's unbelievable the way they're talking. And they're all kind of saying the same thing. You know, when we're dealing with a group of people that look at animals as if they're equal to humans, and even beyond, and almost in a sense we're going to protect, in this case, the wolf, even before the people, because if you don't like living next to the wolf, or the wolf scares you or causes a problem for you, then move out, because that's their attitude. We should move out of the region because we took their territory. How do you reason with that? And not only that, when you throw that, then you throw $100 million into a pot with people with that mentality, that's a scary scenario. And then take it one step further when they can go judge shop and get a judge to buy. I don't know how an educated person could have read those affidavits and did what he did, but he did. So you listen to that. That's, I don't know how you manage that. How do you deal with that? Because they can come in and take over your elected system, your electoral system, which they did with our referendum. They did it with the money. They marketed it downstate. They knew just where to go with it. They knew it would never fly in the affected area. And so I don't know if you can fix that other than the referendum system could be changed, where you have to have a percentage of votes out of every single county to match the referendum target. So that might be a better way to go, because then you don't disenfranchise one region like we were disenfranchised by Lower Michigan, where 3% of us are dealing with 100% of the problem.
Let's jump to a piece of legislation that you authored in regards to the DNR and biological diversity, where you were looking to prohibit the DNR, or any state agency for that matter, from preserving land specifically for the intention of achieving or maintaining biological diversity. I guess if you could go a little bit more into it and why you decided to bring this piece of legislation forward.
Yeah, it almost really ties in with what we just talked about. Because, again, you have a group of people that, and these are professors from our universities, internal people within the Department of Natural Resources, and some environmental groups around them that have a viewpoint of biodiversity that doesn't match up sometimes with the average folks. What I mean by that is they only look at biodiversity as a set-aside, that you can only set it off to the side, don't touch, don't look at it, don't, you know, maybe look at it from a tower or something, but don't use it. You can't use it, otherwise it wouldn't be biodiversity. Well, that's not true. There's a lot of activities that enhance biodiversity. And so what our approach was is we were trying to make the case that if you're going to manage for biodiversity, you must look at all types of biodiversity and have a mixture or a balance. Senate Bill 78 didn't go after anything that was already on the book. So in other words, they've got a lot of set-asides out there already that are biodiversity the way these professors would like biodiversity. Great. But there's no balance in it. They just keep marching forward. I'll give you an example. They used natural areas was a term they used back in, I think, the 90s and into the 2000s, the first part of the 2000 era. They used what they called natural areas and dedicated these off-site areas. And if you go read the natural areas program, it cites biodiversity in it. It speaks about biodiversity, so that's what it was intended for. But when you go look at it, it's very restrictive. there's no activity at all in it. Logging is prohibited in it. Exploration for mining, prohibited in it. And it goes on and on about how it prohibits stuff. So then it's like they ran the course with that program, and then all of a sudden they come out with a new program called Biodiversity Stewardship Area, the DNR. So when I read through that program, that was starting out with about 700,000 acres in northern Lower Michigan being dedicated to a what they called a biodiversity stewardship area. What was really scary about it was it included all the private land inside of that corridor, which was about 200,000 acres. So through the stroke of a pen, the director and some of these college professors who were helping put this thing together all agreed they must all do it, including the private landowner. When we stepped in and said, that's going too far, you can't do this, we were told that wasn't true. And we were told that we were exaggerating it. Until a week later, after I had confronted the director, a week later the director came back to my office and said, you're correct. It did include the private land as well in this program. That means you had that director sign that order and sent it off to Washington. And then the feds would have sent some money back through a grant to allow them to manage for this biodiversity stewardship area. Those people with that private land would have had to manage their land the same way. They might have had different intentions for their land, but their personal property rights would have been gone because the feds would have enforced it because of the grant money they gave to the state. And the state, in this case, and the environmental groups that worked on this program knew full well that stuff was in there, and they were still willing to do it. That's why we ran Senate Bill 78. It dealt with what they did and where they were going, and we said you have to have balance. You can't just go in arbitrarily and say it's going to be a set-aside or an off-limit deal without analysis, and you have to consider all the other options on the table, and it cannot be just that way. And that was really the intent behind it. It was to try and drive for balance in how they manage state land.
You're listening to Copper Country Today here with my guest, Michigan Senator Tom Casperson. Let's get to another subject where the United States Postal Service was looking to consolidate all Upper Peninsula first-class mail from the Kingsford branch all the way to Green Bay, Wisconsin. A spokesperson from the Postal Service said that the volume just isn't there to have that post there in Kingsford. Why have you chosen to get involved in this this issue?
Well, I get what they're saying, probably with the volume based on population. The problem we run into in these rural areas when they do this is services that we've grown accustomed to and expect could be harmed or somewhat eliminated by doing something like this, certainly slowed down. And with that philosophy, you could make that argument about the infrastructure up here with our highways and our roads. We don't have enough people up here to make the argument that we need the road infrastructure. We got as an example. We got a lot of roads for the number of people we have, yet many people use it, and it's divvied out amongst the entire state, and that's how that's how we balance out road funding, so that everybody gets to use it. And if you take their mentality, it just seems to me like those in the rural areas are really going to be swimming up a creek here, because they're not looking at the balance side of this thing. They're looking at the big populations and where, in their eyes, it makes sense. But I would say come and live here, because when you look at the distribution that they're talking about, Kingsford takes care of a large area, a very large area. I would grant them the numbers might not be there to the level that they're talking, but the area is certainly there. And if you don't consider that would be my argument. I don't think they're considering the vast area that we're servicing. And you just compounded that by bringing it even farther away.
Another subject that kind of went a little bit under the radar, but I think that it had to be talked about, just coming off the historical winter we had last year and the whole issues with the propane shortage, was the EPA coming up with the regulations for the new wood-burning stoves. Now, obviously, the regulations would only apply to the newer stoves that would be manufactured in 2015 and beyond, and they want them to burn 80% more cleanly. You have come out against any of these regulations. But, I mean, given that, according to the EPA, 13% of the population comes from stoves like these, aren't these regulations supposed to be a good thing from a health standpoint?
Yeah, except they're misleading everybody, because we had testimony on the wood stoves, and we found out that wood stove manufacturers had been involved with the EPA for quite some time, coming up with standards for new wood boilers. They came up with this idea that they could go to the car manufacturers, take a look at the technologies they put into the exhaust systems, and potentially utilize some of that to put on these wood boilers. They actually agreed to do it, and they had come up with a standard that, according to the manufacturers, when they walked away from those work groups, they thought they had reached an agreement. And then there was a period of time that went by before any more contact, and then all of a sudden, the EPA comes out with their standard. Well, not being a scientist, others that maybe understand this a little better than I do would understand what the numbers mean, but the agreement that the manufacturers thought they had was they would make the new boilers 0.032 emissions, which was by far greater than and better than what was actually out there. In fact, we heard terms of 80 to 90% more efficient than what's already out there. That's a huge improvement. And so then when we looked at what the EPA was proposing, they were proposing a 0.006 standard. When we asked some of the people that are experts in that world what that means, well, what that means is you have to have perfectly dried wood and particular types of wood. Not all wood could meet that burning, you know, just any type of wood doesn't necessarily work because you can't meet that standard with it. So we're telling people you've got to have some of the best dried wood on the planet, and you can only burn certain types of wood, and that's going to be the only way they can manufacture these things to hit this 0.006 standard. So when I asked manufacturers in committee, what did they tell you during these work groups that they because apparently they disagreed with the 0.032 standard that you thought there was an agreement on. So what did they tell you was their change of attitude that they had to go to this 0.006? And the manufacturers told us, we don't know what changed because they never talked to us or called us back. That's pretty troubling, because the question we all should be asking ourselves is, who did the EPA talk to then? Where did they come up with their quote standard? Who did they talk to, and where did they come up with it, and how did they justify it? Well, the 0.006, that standard, a campfire, when you're out camping with your family, won't meet that standard. You can't meet it. A campfire cannot meet the standard. So people say, well, where does this end? Well, they certainly will say right away, oh, it's just the outside wood boilers. I would argue, really? What about my fireplace in my home? What about the campfire when we're out family camping? What about these things? Because if it's that big a deal, can you imagine the next argument that you're all sitting around that campfire taking in these fumes and how dangerous that's going to be, even though we've been doing this for hundreds and hundreds of years? That's where this stuff is heading. And when we asked where this all came from, we had environmental groups testifying in our committee. That was the only thing they were frustrated with and upset with, is that we would even challenge them as to where you come up with the standard and how do you justify the standard. So I'm more convinced now than ever that the departments, in this case the EPA, the design of the standard wasn't designed to make the stove better. It was designed to kill the stove and put it out of business. And so I think that's totally unreasonable. And so that's why we've sent a message off to the EPA saying we thought it was, because we need to weigh in on this thing, because for their public comment time, we have to say something. And the other thing is, I didn't want our state DEQ getting involved in this, so for now we're sending a statement to them to stay away from it and leave it alone. When you consider the winter we had last winter and how many people survived it because they had the ability to burn in those stoves to keep their families warm, and then the EPA on top of that, or right on the heels of that, comes out with this type of standard, I can't fathom the thinking. I don't understand what they would be thinking, because what do they expect these people to do, burn propane now? You know, I mean, after everything that happened, it just, to me, was so unreasonable what they did. And I'm trying to put my arms around why they did it, because it doesn't seem to just fit air quality. It seems like there's more to it.
You're listening to Copper Country Today here with my guest, Michigan State Senator Tom Casperson. Another piece of legislation that you got involved in was regarding the Sanco ambulance in Ontonagon County. So how did you decide that this was an issue that needed to be addressed?
Well, this was a good issue that the whole UP delegation was working on. Scott DeAnda and John Kivala were kind of leading the charge over the House to get it done. They got it over to me as it was, and then we got into trouble with the bills and the number of bills that were coming through at the last hour and how we were going to get this thing done. So there was a bill that we call it a bill that complied with what section of law that we were dealing with that would be a good what they call vehicle bill. So I asked if we could amend that bill to do exactly what Scott and John were trying to do, and then I could get it through the Senate quicker and get it back over to them for concurrence and actually get it done. And so John and I talked about it, and we agreed that's the best route we could to get it done because we were running out of time. So that's what we did, but what it did was it fixes or gives some relief to Ontonagon with their ambulance service right now, so that the way the amendment read was that they could only provide services to the level of their training, but at least we'll have ambulance service versus just canceling it altogether. And that the Department of Community Health actually agreed with us on that and said that would make sense to help get them through this time of economic troubles that they have. So that's what it did.
And I do want to get your take on the road funding issue. It seemed like it was a discussion that was going on for the past year, and it went all the way until, you know, the final hours of the legislative session. What was your take on that whole discussion, and how was it during those final hours of trying to come up with something?
Well, actually, it was when I looked at what happened, it almost went completely full circle, because where we ended up was where we were starting, and that was the 6% sales tax is our problem in Michigan on gas tax. We have a sales tax on top of gas tax or on top of the gasoline. And so when you look at our overall taxation on gas, we're right in the ballpark. In some cases, we're higher than the surrounding states. The problem is only 19 cents of the total tax goes to roads. The rest of it is because of that sales tax. And so a lot of people thought, well, then you need to just vote and to change it so that the money goes to the roads. Well, the problem with that is we can't, because what's in the sales tax is constitutional. I can't legislatively change how we spend the money in the sales tax. That has to go to the people. So it wasn't simple like that. It wasn't like we just take a simple vote and do that. If we just raise the gas tax, if we just put more money on the gas tax to get us more in line with the surrounding states with us to get a feel of where is the right number, we couldn't do that because we'd be far ahead of the other states as far as competitively. We'd be getting killed. Our border states would be in, our border counties would be in trouble. All the little the shops along the way, the gas stations along the way, the convenience stores, they'd all be getting hit because our gas prices would skyrocket next to our border states. So that wasn't a good option. And so really the option was to remove the sales tax. That we can legislatively do. Just take it right off of the item. In this case, we're talking about gasoline. So vote to remove it, get it off of gasoline, then backfill the gas tax that's currently there with a wholesale tax. That's what we did. So now the tax will be right about the same, maybe just a hair more, but it'll be almost identical to where it was. But we don't have the sales tax on there anymore, which everybody might think, well, that's great, except for the problem when we remove the sales tax from gasoline, we create about an $800 million hole for public education. So therein was the problem. That's what kept coming back up, was the $800 million hole for education, a little over $100 million to local units of government. So it created some pretty good-sized holes by doing that. So that's why we tie-barred this thing together, and we said, the way we can fix that is to go to a 7% sales tax, but that's going to be a vote of the people. Take that 1%, dedicate it to education and to local units of government, revenue sharing, so it's constitutionally put in place, and it has to go there. And that 1% would keep everybody whole, and you would fix both scenarios. You'd fix education, and you'd fix road funding for the long haul, and we won't be back visiting this for a long time to come. And on top of that, if you look at the sales tax, that puts us very competitive with all the Great Lakes states. All the Great Lakes states, on average, are right about 7%. And if you look at our gas tax, if we restructure it and now spend that money on the roads, we're putting about the same amount of money into the roads as all the surrounding states around us do as well. So that's why, to me, it seemed like a fix. That's a long-term fix. We don't have to come back and visit this in the next 3 years. This will be fixed for the next generation, and I think that's a good fix versus every 2-3 years we got to keep coming back and look at this thing.
Alrighty, that'll wrap up this segment of Copper Country Today. I'd like to thank Senator Tom Casperson for joining me on today's program. Thank you, Senator Casperson.
Thanks for having me.
Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, proud supporters of the Copper Country Humane Society and the Keweenaw Spay and Neuter Assistance Group. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at KeweenawReport.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Copper Country Today.